This week, I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for tuning in. An Oregon doctor and lawmaker describes seeing a teenage boy the same age as her own son overdosing in a hospital. The teen accidentally took a pill laced with fentanyl. Dr. Maxine Dexter said that incident inspired her to work on Oregon's opioid harm reduction policies that passed in the state legislature. And now she wants to take the same ideas to the national level. Dexter is running for Congress in District 3, among the Democrats competing in May's primary election for the chance to represent the party in November's election. The winner will replace the retiring Earl Blumenauer, who's held the job in Congress for almost 30 years. So in this episode, we are focusing on Dr. and State Representative Maxine Dexter and what she wants to do if voters elect her to Congress.
I'm State Representative and Dr. Maxine Dexter, honored to represent the city of Portland for the last 4 years. I grew up here in the Pacific Northwest. No one on either side of my family to this day has ever graduated from college except for me. I likely wouldn't have either, but for my fifth grade teacher, Mr. McLeod, who must have seen something in me as he explained to me what college was, I had never heard of it, and helped me believe I would be a doctor one day. My home was not a happy one. My mother struggled with mental illness and anger, and it created tremendous turmoil for my brother and I. At 16, I got a union job at an Albertsons grocery store. The job gave me a good wage, full benefits, and stability. I left home and worked my way through the rest of high school, then college, and into medical school with that job and the community I found with it. In the clinic, I take care of people who can't breathe well due to problems like asthma, COPD, and lung cancer. In the hospital, I take care of the sickest people on life support. I take care of my patients with compassion and dedication, just as I will take care of our community if elected to be your congressperson. My top three priorities are, number one, universal, affordable, high-quality healthcare, including abortion care. Number two, bold climate action. As a mother, it is imperative we leave a livable world for future generations. Third, I will fight for opportunity for all. I am only here because I had a good union job with benefits, good reproductive health care, affordable housing, and affordable higher ed. That stability is no longer a reality, and I will fight tirelessly to get it back.
At a forum put on by Portland City Club, Maxine was asked, "Democracy is under attack across America, yet leaders like Congressman Blumenauer have worked to engage their constituents. How will you engage the insights found in Congressman Blumenauer's long tenure in Congress? And if she's elected, what new ways of leadership would she be excited about employing for Oregonians?"
These are enormous shoes to fill. What Congressman Blumenauer has done has been remarkable. I've been in the room where he's brought some of our most diverse leaders to our community and helped elevate them and really ushered them into the spotlight in a way that is impactful, not just here in our community to see leaders of color, but across the country. His staunch, persistent elevation of the need for functioning democracy is something that we are working here in the state on right now. It includes making sure that everyone has access to the ballot, that everyone can get there without encumbrance, and that we have campaign finance reform. We are working on campaign finance reform here in Oregon, and we must make sure that we continue to work tirelessly on this at the national level. What we are seeing with independent expenditures and dark money in our elections is frankly offensive and needs to be effectively stopped and really bring the vote back to the people and the power back to the people.
Dexter was asked to share a single policy effort she was most proud of from her recent tenure in public service and how constituents in District 3 could continue to expect movement in the same way if she was elected to serve as congressperson for District 3. She described her work on Oregon's opioid crisis.
Luckily, I've had enormous opportunity to make some meaningful achievements, but I think the one that I hold closest and the one I'm most proud of is our opioid harm reduction omnibus package that we passed last year. And this came as a result of me seeing in the hospital a young person who had unintentionally overdosed with a counterfeit OxyContin pill that was laced with fentanyl. He was at a party. His family had, or his friends were there. They had no idea that they needed to call 911. And once they realized they should have, they were too scared to do so. By the time he got there, he was the same age as my child, could have happened to any of our children. And I knew we needed to act. So we brought together a broad, really bipartisan. We had law enforcement. We had opioid harm reduction clinics. We had just healthcare providers across the state come together and made a list of all the things that we wanted to get done. And we did things like decriminalize fentanyl test strips so that the University of Oregon students who couldn't hand them out now can. We got Narcan into the public schools, and now we know that parents are getting educated about Narcan while they also are giving consent effectively to let it be given to their children should they be in a crisis. We have first responders who are compassion fatigued at times, being able to give out, not just administer, but actually give the Narcan to people after they've been resuscitated. We had 13 policies in that package, and it was passed with bipartisan support in a way that I couldn't be more proud of. And I very much hope to take that same package to Washington.
Dexter also talked about policies she would support on climate change.
I am currently very proud to have had Unite Oregon and Apano and lots of folks in my office thanking us for getting the maximum $15 million ask for healthy homes, which is critical to our being able to adapt to climate change. This is a two-pronged problem. We've got to adapt to the extreme heat events that we see in front of us every day, while we also dig in and do the work that we need to do to make true climate impact and mitigate it. What I've been able to participate in as a state lawmaker is not just the big picture carbon discussions that we've had, and we've done a lot over the last few years. I was proud to carry the PFAS ban and the styrofoam ban. We worked hard to try to get indirect sources taken care of so that we could minimize the diesel fumes in our most vulnerable populations. But the biggest thing that we have been able to do is really lean in and make sure that people are safe, and they must be safe. My district lost more people's lives in the heat dome event in 2021 than any other legislator or any other district in the state. And that is an unacceptable consequence of poverty and lack of access to climate safety. We need cooling centers, and this, we have been working on that. We have climate resilience community hubs that we are now investing in, and we will continue to do everything we can to shift away from fossil fuel dependence. And that ultimately is what is the thing that we must do, is to transition away from fossil fuels into renewables effectively and urgently.
Dexter also explained how she would ensure that Oregonians in District Number 3 would have increased access to the influx of federal Inflation Reduction Act resources and infrastructure dollars flowing into states across the country.
There are so many amazing opportunities that I'm going to do everything I can to get through. But my very favorite project is about the Albina Vision Trust project. Senator Jama and I are excited to have gotten $25 million into this year's package to make sure that we can get the Portland Public Schools property secured for Albina Vision Trust. And this is an incredible opportunity to really address the harm that has been done by the I-5 corridor and the destruction of our Albina district. I also would take it a step further. Not only should be investing in the housing and bringing people back to the river, but we need to make sure that we use that I-5 corridor to bring transportation change to our city. I would argue that we should close I-5 between the Fremont and the Markham bridges, invest in high-speed rail and bike-ped transportation through that area, and use congestion pricing on the 405 to get around the city and truly bring that community back together. And the Inflation Reduction Act and the dollars that Pete Buttigieg, as Director of Transportation, have been, this is exactly the kind of project that is meant to be used for. I'm a proud sponsor of the offshore wind bill that is going to bring investment into Oregon, but it's going to do it maintaining the labor standards that we have here in Oregon that are more rigorous than federal dollars.
What's Dexter's plan to make sure that mental health and addiction are taken seriously at the national level so that state and local leaders aren't left out to dry?
The number one thing that I would do is to treat addiction and the mental health crisis as a public health disaster that it is. We have to take a public health approach to this issue. The first thing we must do is prevent in our young kids. We need to make sure that we are giving them the tools that they need to not take that counterfeit fentanyl pill or counterfeit OxyContin pill. But they also need access to school-based health centers in every middle school and high school where they feel safe and seen and capable of getting access to those treatments. I have had students in my office really in crisis. Our suicide rates are dramatically going up. And in Oregon, we are far too far behind. So our federal government needs to invest in public health robustly, and it needs to be matched at the state level. The second thing is treatment. Until fentanyl is less available than the treatment to treat addiction, which is a chronic disease, we will continue to have people driven to use fentanyl. We had created this problem at the federal level. We made sure that the drug companies had access to people and promotion of their addictive drugs long after they knew they were addictive. And we need to fix that by making sure that we invest in production of medical assisted therapy across the board to make sure that we flood our communities with treatment. We need to reduce the stigma. We need to see this as the crisis, the disease that it is. It is not a failure of a person. It is a failure of our system that we aren't dealing with the despair that drives people to addiction.
Next, Dexter was asked, with anti-racism, critical race theory, justice, equity, diversion, and inclusion, access to literature, and affirmative action being challenged at the national and local levels, how would she advance aspects of equity in her policy work and ensure it continues to be a value for Oregonians in Congressional District 3?
Making sure that everyone has access to the ballot is critical for dealing with this. And then removing the barriers for our marginalized communities. It is not lost on me that the primary voters in CD3 are higher educated, white, affluent people. Until we bring democracy to everyone and empower them to believe that it matters, we will continue to lose the representation that we need across our communities. We have done an enormous amount of work in our housing space. I have been the lead on our housing investments. And what that really is making sure that communities have a safe and affordable place to live in every part of in wherever they choose to live. And until people have that, they continue to be unstable and unable to participate in having a fulfilling life. One of the major investments we made last session was in our agricultural worker housing. People were living on farms, not able to live anywhere else. And we invested $15 million to try to start $10 million for the community-based housing that our agricultural workers, especially in Hood River, we have the most ag workers in Hood River in the state, really need. Anti-racism also means, and I'm just going to call it out loud, that we have to bring people of color into power. I am not that person, yet I have been dedicated to making sure that people are at the table. I have worked across every policy that I've made with intention to bring people into that room. And we need to make sure that we pay people for their time, that they have childcare, that they have food, that they have transportation to get there. And unless we truly invest those things in bringing people to the tables, it won't happen. And I've been advocating for a state fund to make sure people have that support to participate.
What efforts would she take to ensure that Americans have access to a universal healthcare system? And how would she use her influence as a congressperson to affect change in Oregon related to healthcare access?
This is why I ran for office. I am a physician who sees every day the impacts of not having access to safe and affordable medical care in my patients, in my community. It is indefensible that we continue to perpetuate this. Universal access to a single payer plan would be amazing. And I wish that it was easy to do, but we cannot do it with one bill. We are going to have to lean in and decimate the for-profit entities that continue to profit off of our medical system. One of the things that I've been butting my head up against as a state representative trying to get rid of fee-for-service medicine, because until we align payment for care with the outcomes of health that we desire, we will not be able to get to true universal access. And we have to put the insurers at risk. They have to manage the system. And that's what getting rid of fee-for-service medicine would do. But we can't do that in Oregon because we have to get a waiver from the federal government. So what we need to do is make waivers more eligible and more easily shared with the states, because the states are the laboratories of our government. And we will continue to evolve as we then scale it at a national level. The three things that I think must happen to get to universal access is, number one, we get rid of fee-for-service. We've got to align payment with the health of people. Primary care physicians are working so hard that we're losing them hand over fist, and we are not attracting more. So we have to make sure that we get rid of the fee-for-service medicine. Otherwise, we will continue to not reimburse primary care for the value that they bring. Number two, we got to get rid of the administrative burdens and hurdles and all the things that not only insurance companies do, but our government does to us. And we have to simplify the system. And then lastly, we have to bargain for affordable medications. And until pharmaceutical companies are kept on a budget, we will continue to explode in our costs for care.
Since small businesses are what power Oregon's economy, and in particular Congressional District 3, what would Dexter do to support small businesses to be treated fairly in implementing Oregon's climate policy?
Our small businesses have been incredibly stressed during this period of time. The biggest thing that I think that I was able to do personally was lead on House Bill 2001, which is the Oregon Housing Needs Analysis, which is going to help us build in and build up, because climate policy depends on people being able to live and work as close to possible to the proximity of where they are and to have transportation. With the Oregon Housing Needs Analysis, we have evolved Senate Bill 100, our 50-year emerald jewel of our land use or of our environmental policy as a state. I was the leader who negotiated where that's going to be and how we are going to continue to build in and build up before we expand the urban growth boundaries. Why that matters is if people can live in affordable housing close to where they work, they won't have to spend as much time commuting on childcare. We must make public transit free for everyone. We must increase infrastructure for childcare. Our state has been investing in childcare that goes hand in hand with the CHIPS Act. We understand in Oregon that childcare is key for small businesses to have the employees that they need. The last thing is affordable healthcare. One of the biggest expenditures for a small business, if they are trying to take care of their people, is the cost of healthcare. If we do not address that enormous cost and make it predictable, we will continue to fail our small businesses. And I was proud to work with Congresswoman Salinas when she was health care chair to pass the public option bill, which would allow for us to bring in affordable health care for all.
At another forum for the group Oregon Physicians for a National Health Program and the Portland City Club, Dr. and State Representative Dexter talked about lowering the cost of medications.
We have cancer drugs that are really making enormous impacts on patients' ability to live longer and healthier lives with fewer side effects. At what point can we start negotiating those down? Medicare is subsidizing our postgraduate medical education programs, and the NIH is being subsidized as well. And those programs are connected to how pharmaceutical drugs are getting out into the system. If we didn't have NIH dollars that weren't subsidizing the development of these drugs, they would be even more expensive. And yet, despite our subsidizing them, we are still paying more than any other country on earth for these medications. There should be some return on that investment for the American public.
So does she think that all healthcare delivery and drug manufacturing should be nonprofit?
It's an interesting question. One might argue that nonprofit is better for the system. I think there are challenges with the nonprofit and the for-profit. Certainly, nonprofits are benefiting from tax breaks, which give them an opportunity to deliver care at a more affordable price, and they deliver indigent care for those who are uninsured in our community. I personally am biased and think that for-profit institutions in healthcare are inherently going to be driven to bring shareholder returns and not prioritizing patient health. I think with deep regulations and outcome expectations, perhaps there could be room for a capitalist innovation there. I do believe that there needs to be more regulation there if we are going to allow for-profit entities to expand. We're in fact thinking about the corporate practice of medicine with a bill that we're discussing right now, and the dramatic increase in private equity investments in not just hospitals, but clinics and practices is leading to dramatically worse outcomes in some places, and certainly decimating the practice of medicine for a lot of our practitioners. So I have a lot of concerns about for-profit entities in medicine. For us to get to a place where pharmaceuticals were nonprofit, we would have to take on an enormous burden as a society for the development and ongoing evolution of the drug supply system. So how we would do that would potentially be amazing. And I think unless we were really robustly investing in it, we would not be able to keep up with the innovations that the United States has driven for a lot of the world. And someone else would fill that gap almost certainly, but I'm not sure that it would necessarily be of benefit to Americans. There's far too much profit being made in pharmaceuticals. It is an uncontrolled cost that until we get our hands around, we won't be able to truly get to an affordable healthcare system. The physician-patient relationship and the ability to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because you're going to make more money, has to be disincentivized. And we are seeing enormous major shift to employment of physicians rather than independent practices. The hanging your shingle out outside of your door and having a private practice is really almost a colloquialism at this point. It's just not realistic for the vast majority of people. So the regulations and the administrative burden is driving a lot of that. We need to simplify things and incentivize clinician-owned and operated practices. If we do that, we'll be able to attract a lot of physicians and clinicians to Oregon.
What's Dexter's vision for a housing policy that helps low-income communities and communities of color?
We are continuing to work on this. We have disinvested from public housing since the Reagan era. So we have been, for over 40 years, decreasing and almost not investing in housing that's truly subsidized. What government should be doing in healthcare and housing and other things are the things that the local jurisdictions and the community cannot do for itself. And what we cannot do for ourselves is build affordable housing in a private market without major subsidies. Contractors have to pay workers. We want to have workforce that gets family wage jobs. They shouldn't be getting wage theft and underpaid. We want people to be able to work on the housing and make a living. And to do that with all the construction costs and the land costs and all the other things, you cannot build affordable housing unless you're quite innovative. And we do have some thoughts about how we can do that better, but we have to be able to subsidize it. And public housing, there's some pretty robust data that it's simpler and more effective to just invest in public housing and not have the tax incentives and all the other things that people have to pull together to get to an affordable project that actually is affordable and a builder wants to build. We've just got to invest more, and we haven't. And the way that we can get BIPOC families and true economic justice and a fair economy is making sure that everyone has access to affordable affordable housing in the community of their choice. And that might be very different for a student who is willing to share a room in a single occupancy unit with a shared kitchen in a dorm-like situation. Or it might be that three-bedroom, two-bathroom homes for every family is not realistic, and we need to think about alternatives to that. Community living with co-ops and land trusts and things are absolutely opportunities for us. And what we need to just say is that we believe that housing is a right, that people need to have access to it, and that we as a community are willing to invest in that. And we used to do that, and we have done it. Government can do amazing things, but we have to make a choice, and investing in this would cost a lot of money. We also are at this time where we have the most income inequity almost ever. I think I've heard different things, but you could argue that it's more than ever. We have opportunities at the very highest tax rates to get to a marginal tax rate that is much higher than what we're seeing now. And that investment or that revenue would pay for all the programs that we're needing in a lot of ways for housing and healthcare. We could get there. So we just need to decide that's a value that we are going to advance and support. And is it simple? Absolutely not. But we've seen more housing starts in Oregon in the last year with investments. We know that we can get there, but we haven't cracked the nut of keeping it affordable for everyone yet.
Finally, Dexter talked about some of her endorsements.
I think those validations do matter. I'm the only person in the state who has been endorsed by every town for gun safety. I've been a Moms Demand Action volunteer, and that is incredibly important to me. I've also been endorsed by unions and over 50 state, local, and community leaders, because they understand that my experience as a physician, as somebody from a working class family, and a hard worker is going to make sure I get work done for Oregonians. I come from a working class background. I'm on the precipice of privilege. If I hadn't had access to a union job and affordable housing and all those things, I wouldn't be here today. And as a physician, people count on me to listen carefully and care for them with compassion and skill when their lives are on the line. I am fighting for you as a state legislator and as a physician, and I am delivering on the issues that matter to our community: housing, public safety, behavioral health, and healthcare. That experience only elevates for me how much more important it is that we get tough things done in hard spaces, and Congress is about as hard as it's going to get, and I am going to lean in. You don't have to hope that I'm going to be effective. You know that I'm going to be effective because I have been doing this work for the last 4 years. As a doctor and a state representative, I know how to listen, lead, and get hard things done. And I know the laws that we make impact the lives of my patients. I see it every day at all levels. And I know personally how important it is that every person in our community has access to opportunity. I will work tirelessly to be sure that every Oregonian has the ability to live a healthy life in a healthy community on a healthy planet. Thank you so much for your consideration, and I hope I've earned your trust and your vote.
My website is maxinefororegon.com.
Since 2020, Dr. and Oregon State Representative Maxine Dexter has represented the 33rd District, which covers the Northwest District and Northwest Heights of Portland, Cedar Mill, Oak Hills, and most of Bethany. She's running as a candidate for the Democratic primary in Oregon's Congressional District 3 in the May primary election. You're listening to Speaking Freely with Annette Newell. Thanks for tuning in here on your favorite Alpha Media radio station. If you have a topic you'd like to hear about on this show, please send me an email about it to annette.newell@alphamediausa.com. One more time, that's annette.newell@alphamediausa.com. We also invite you to check out our Speaking Freely podcast on KXL.com. And be sure to join us again next week.